Thanks for tuning in to the G&JB show today, minus Jack Bowen, who's out there trying to earn a living working on a building site. Guys, today I chat with Gerard Yao Yi. What a superior athlete Gerard was back in the day. His career was cut short by a tragic injury. Guys, tune in, listen to what Gerard has to say and how his mindset got him through the tough times. Hope you enjoy.
Hey, G, how you going, my man?
Good, champion. How are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm good, brother. Just cruising, just at home, not doing too much.
Mate, what a crazy world we're living in at the moment.
Oh, bro, it's really odd, mate. It's if you told me at the start of this year that there'd be no sports, there'd be no rugby league, be nothing, and I wouldn't have a job, I'd be telling you lying to me. Be saying you're lying.
Mate, so what happened? It's just come to an end at the Broncos, or are you on hold, or...?
Yeah, well, I took my redundancy, mate. Because it was probably the best outcome for me at the moment. Yeah. You know, I probably could have dragged it on a little bit longer, but you know, I could have come out worse. The best thing, you know, for me and my wife was for me to. I've been there for a while, so it was the best thing for me to do was take that, and I got. You know, some good advice from some people who I trust. Yeah. Look, it's not what I wanted. I still want to be at the Broncos, and there may be an opportunity, you know, when the footy starts up again, but I'm not going to hold my breath, mate. I don't want to force them into, you know, trying to employ people, you know, that they don't really need at the moment. Look, I'm a person who really wants the club to thrive, and look, if that means me leaving for a while and going away, then I'm happy to. I want to be there, but if it is what it is, that's just the way it is at the moment.
Yeah, mate. Quite a few questions, and one thing I want to touch on. We'll touch on, I suppose, the future of the Broncos and your future a little bit later. But mate, what a lot of people want to know. I did a chat with LT last week, which was pretty cool, and a lot of people want to know the behind-the-scenes stuff. Because, you know, we all read about Gerard Yao Yi. Is it Yao Yi or Yao Yay? How do you pronounce it?
Oh, look, it's... my grandmother was still alive right now. She'd kill me for saying this. But I always say Gerard Yao Yi, but I think she's... our family is Yao Yay. So it just rolls off the tongue easy if you say Gerard Yao Yi, you know? Yeah, well, rabbits had his own way of saying it, so I'm not going to tell him how to speak, mate. So, yeah.
Mate, so what I wanted to know is, like, about your life growing up. Where are you from? Where did you play junior footy? You know, the behind-the-scenes stuff that general people don't touch on. Everybody knows you scored tries and obviously your injury and, you know, what you're doing now. Tell us a bit about the life for Gerard Yee as a kid. What did you do? I know you're an arsehole. That's going to come in there somewhere. Where were you born? What happened in your childhood?
Drop out, lost you for a sec. Oh, there you go. We're back.
Me?
Yep.
Nice.
Yeah, it's, well, for me, it all started... my family's from Rockhampton. I was born and raised though in Brisbane, so I call Brisbane home. To me, on the north side of Brizzy, north side of Brizzy, in a little area called Capera, Arana Hills, Mitchelton is where my whole family basically grew up, and here on this side of town, and went on this side of town as well. And I think sporting wise, it was always in my family. My mum was a very good soccer player, and so was my auntie. They played for Australia, and they went overseas and stuff like that. Yeah, and that's where sort of soccer started for me, and sports in general started for me. So
That was probably before female soccer was a very big thing too, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was. So I'm not sure if they were called the Matildas back then, but I still remember, you know, mum coming back from overseas and bringing me an Arsenal jersey back. And from that day on, when I was, about 9 or 10 years old, I've been... And lucky for me, they they were going really, really well. You know, the Invincibles, you know, the Theory Unraid, Dennis Bergkamp had come through there. And so we're not going that good at the moment, the Gunners. But I'm loyal. I'm going to stick with them. Yeah, that's just been my team. And that's sort of how – that's how sports started for me. And I think from then on, it just was – rugby. I got introduced to rugby league by one of my good mates who I'm still friends with now, Cameron Starkey. He introduced me to rugby league at school, and yeah, the rest is history pretty much. I mean, it took from there, and I loved it.
Yeah. Did you play junior soccer as well?
Yeah, I did. I actually went to the AIS in Canberra. I was actually a pretty good soccer player. So, yeah, so I played right wing, which is, you know, really funny because I played right wing when I played rugby league. But I played right wing, striker, and keeper, goalkeeper, because you're good at catching, you know, balls. So, you know, they were the three positions that I enjoyed the most. And my mum was a sweeper, so she was a defender, and she was very, very aggressive, and loved hurting people. So, yeah, I think I got that little bit of roughness from her, and that's what led me into playing rugby league.
Yeah, nice. So, who was your junior club? Your junior rugby league club?
Junior rugby league club. I first started my first year at West Arana Panthers here at on the north side. Then I played one year with them, and then left and went and played the rest of my junior footy with Norse Devils, and then my senior footy with Norse Devils, and that's where I got picked up by the club.
Mate, speaking about getting picked up by the club, so did you go for a trial, or had they seen you? How did it actually happen? This is the stuff that general public that haven't been involved in professional sport, they want to know these feelings, and especially kids as well, because they want to know, like, oh, shit, there's still a chance for me yet. You know what I mean? A lot of kids, I said to LT last week, I said, mate, a lot of people hear about these great fighters with perfect amateur records, but you know what? It ain't real.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah.
It's sometimes we learn and we'd be successful because of failures we've had along the way. I'm a big believer in that. Like LT said, he didn't play junior rep footy until he'd already signed terms with the Broncos. So what can you remember that first inkling you had about? There's an opportunity. It might become a professional footballer.
I do remember like it was yesterday, and you've said it perfect, G. You've got to fail so many times to know that to be successful. And I think young people don't understand that. Failure is a key to success. I mean, like, firstly, before we go into that, I mean, you won't even know what success feels like if you've never failed. So I think that's a good key for kids to take away from, playing sports. You're not going to win everything. And if you do, well, then you're just a freak, you know. And they come around. People like that come around, and they just do. But they're once in a lifetime. Parramatta actually picked me up in 2017 at the start of 2017. And I actually went to Parramatta. I actually went to Sydney and played a bit of SG ball and Harold Matts down there. I was on a scholarship. I was 17. So I was 17. I just turned 17 in December, and I'd gone in about January, February at the start of 2007.
2007, not
17.
Sorry,
No, I was 17 years old. So that was – I just got told that I wouldn't – wasn't big enough, and I wouldn't make their side down there. So that was upsetting during the heart, you know, that first, because I got a taste of it, right? And I wanted more professionalism. Like, I was training with professional coaches. I was training with, you know, people in the gym, and I just started to get this routine. It's like being in school, man. Like, you leave school and you basically go straight back into school. They tell you what to do. They give you your programs. You just got to turn up to class and not fail, basically. So that's what it felt like playing footy, coming out of school. And I was a little bit upset because I thought that was it for me. I thought my dream was over. I was like, man, you know, an NRL team has told me that I'll never be anything. But the other part of me was being stubborn, and I loved people telling me that I couldn't do something. It's been happening all my life. So I got that piece of advice. went back to North with it, had a killer year. I played 6 or 7 cup games at 17 years old, which not many kids did back then. And from then on, the Bronx, offered me no money. They offered me a trial and train with them. And I said, man, definitely. And look, if anyone who has been with the Broncos know that it ain't just about the money there. You get so much gear. You get looked after so well. Like, it wasn't about the money at all for me. I mean, I'm turning up and getting Nike boots. I mean, me and my mum and my family, we couldn't afford Nike boots. So, so the boots for me were, Nike boots for me were like, I got like 5 pairs of runners, joggers, boots, and then all my Broncos gear. And I was like, this is the best day ever. So that's where the Broncos sort of journey started for me. And I turned up day one and I met people like, who were household names. Andrew McCulloch, Alex Glenn, Ben Hunts, Jerry Beals, Josh Hoffman, Josh McGuire's, who are household names. They become really close mates with me from day one.
So was that 20s back then and you all played in that 20s side?
So it was 20. So 2007, I turned 18 in December, so I was still 17 at the time before preseason. Even all those boys were like just turning 17. So we had a pretty young 20 side that year, but the potential that grew from that side. We had about, I think from that top 30, we had 16 kids who would play, who would debut in the first 2 years of the year, 2 years after that 20 side. So there was some serious talent in that side. And I think I thrived off a lot of those kids who I played footy with, man, because, you come to a squad that's like, oh man, I could lose my position here. It's healthy competition and you bust your ass. And the one thing I found out about myself is that I hated getting beaten when I started to get to that level. I refused to get beaten. And pretty much from then on, I started every game and the rest, it got pretty cruisy from there because I got comfortable.
So were you always a winger, like junior footy as well as under 20s? Were you always a winger?
I started in the halves when I first played. That's just because I think I was quick and I didn't, when you're younger, you don't really have to pass a lot of balls when you're in a young age. They sort of just want you to dummy go, show. And that's what I think a lot of kids miss these days about how we play the game of footy. Run first, if you're a half, run first and make a decision after, in the going. So, I started there, moved pretty quickly to fullback because obviously I had those half skills play out the back. And then, just found my niche when I made debut in that cup side for Norse that year on the wing, that I just knew that this was my position. I don't have to do a lot in the middle. I get to carry the ball when there's broken play, and finish the tries off, and that just seemed pretty, like how I would play my footy. So, as I got older and older, and Hodjo pretty well, I started to delve a little bit more into wanting to play in the centres because we knew the old boy was getting pretty old. And, he was going to retire one day. And, we obviously didn't want to go find another centre. And that's probably where I would see myself being playing now if I was still playing the game.
Yeah, right. Mate, that's interesting that you – I find that interesting that you went from half to fullback to wing and you felt like you found your niche on the wing. A lot of halves, hookers, fullbacks, mate, in my mind, they think, no, that's what I am. I'm a playmaker. Yeah. I'm a creator. I ain't a winger. Mm. Like, I think that's pretty, A lot of halves would always hang on to the fact that they're a half, I reckon. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Halves are stubborn. Hookers are smart asses. Just how they are in their head. But I suppose mine was, I just do anything the best was for the team. And at the time, that was the best for the team. And, if I touched the ball, 15 times that game and I scored twice, I was doing pretty good. So my statistics weren't too bad. And that's what I was thinking in my head. I just got to keep doing these things for the team. And the other thing was, you know, I didn't have to, you know, I know I was fit, but I didn't have to, I got to use my energy when I wanted it to on the wing. So I go in there and help when I want and pick my times. And I think I got smarter as I played footy too. I always didn't have to be in the middle and chasing the ball all the time. I knew when it was time to go in there and do something. And I also just loved the big plays. Like I loved scoring tries that just win us the game. And that's what I, you know, halves, you don't see that, unfortunately. And I think that's what really dragged me towards the wing is that I loved having that limelight and being the pretty boy and
the big time.
Time, you know. So I just loved it. So I just found myself there, but I definitely could have seen myself moving into the centres because I had such a great mentor in Hodjo in the centres to move into there. And I probably got a little bit slower as I was getting older because I was getting bigger and stronger. So we need those younger kids on the wing who love to just run. And, you know, I'll just give them the ball at the end of the day.
Mate, one of the questions I just saw before somebody just put up there, what was your, did you have any, what was your routine before big games? Did you have any things that you did, you know, like, I don't know, certain music, eat certain food, that sort of stuff?
Yeah, most definitely. I had a routine, and I still, when I coach now, I still tell kids that it's so important to get your routine when you're young because you're going to keep it for the rest of your life. And I think I learned off, you know, the people like Cooper Cronk that routine is a lot, and you got to make sure you keep it. My routine was, it doesn't sound like a routine, but I would get to the game, I'd get my ankles strapped first. That's the first thing I would do. Yeah. I'd put my headphones in and I'd listen to the same music week in and week out. But I'd walk around in my budgies probably till 2 minutes before the bell, before kickers and catchers would run out. So I'd just be walking around the locker room, being a pain in the ass to everyone. But that's how I enjoyed warming up because I didn't like to play the game before I played it. So I just walk around, do nothing, not think about footy at all. And I think that was one of the things that my coach, Anthony Griffin, hated about me. The only thing he hated about me was that I would annoy everyone. That I would annoy everyone. So the thing that I suppose the kids, you've got to tell kids is, you know, if you've got your routine, just make sure you don't ruin anyone else's routine as well. So, and I was pretty good at doing that. So I think my routine was just get ready at the last minute because if I've got all my kit on, I'm ready to go, man. And I don't want to be ready now before the game. You don't have to play the game before you play. Even kicking and catching, you know, I'd go out there and I'd do my stuff properly, but I'd just more or less look around. And Suncorp Stadium was the one I loved the most. I'd look around and just go, man, people dream of this shit, you know, like, and I'm here and I'm doing this. And I just really was grateful all the time I ran out there or I did any stadium. And until, you know, that hooter went and they go, all right, 2 minutes of the game's on, then I would start shitting myself, like, immediately. Yeah. I get so nervous, but people always told me if you never got nervous before something, it didn't mean anything. So, I would get nervous 2 minutes before the actual kickoff bell, but I was fine before that.
So your nerves, right? I know myself when I played a little bit as well, but obviously not to the heights that you did. But I remember putting that much pressure on myself when I went to England when I was 19 to play, and I played in the second division over there, and I walked out. And you know, another time, like during training or something, because we trained on the same field we played at. So, the stands weren't as big as what they are here, nowhere near. It was a second division team. And I just went out. I reckon I spooked myself by putting that much pressure on myself. This is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to do. And I still don't think I played to my potential by overthinking everything. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Did you ever hear of that sort of stuff?
People, definitely.
Better trainers than players, or, you know?
Oh, definitely. And I think you just know some kids you just see and you just, some players you just know are meant for that big time. You know, and Darren Lockyer for me was always one, or Hodjo was one as well. I mean, every time I ran out with any of those players, you know, you've seen this look in their eye, and it was all fun and games before the game. But as soon as we step over that line, it's like I think of it as well. I do not even hear the crowd when I'm playing footy. Yeah. I do not even think of them until I score a try or until, you know, we're winning the game, until I know it's time to switch off. But when I walk over that line, I literally flick a switch and go, yeah, it's game on. Like, this is what we're here for. Like, I'm ready to go. I'm losing this game. And I think that's what the difference is to, you see a lot of players make it and they crumble under pressure. And, you know, not me, bro. Diamonds are made under pressure. So some people just rise to the occasion, and I loved it. I absolutely loved it. But you switch off. You don't even hear the crowd, and I just think that's what happens, and that's the way I felt like when I ran on the field.
Yeah, nice, mate. What's going back to your first grade debut? What was it like when you got the tap on the shoulder? How did that come about? Had you been playing really good, or you'd been, you know what I mean? When you got the tap on the shoulder, said, "Listen, buddy, you're in this week." Holy shit, like, what was that feeling like? What was it like?
Well, I remember because it was Ivan Henjak was my coach at the time. And there was a few, you know, I'd obviously played 20s last year, so, you know, it was going to be a big step for me to even make my debut in round one. So that's when I debuted, was round one. I had a really good preseason. Yeah. Look, I got a lot stronger than I was. I mean, I still was a little whippet, but I got a little bit bigger.
So it was round one.
Yeah, I debuted round one.
So did you have weeks leading up knowing, or was it like
So you play your trial matches, and they basically pick you from your trial matches, you know, if you've done well enough. So I felt like I'd done enough to play in my debut game, and I walked up to Ivan's room, and you never know what's going to happen. Like, you could be up there because he could be like, "You look, I can't pick you this week," or he could be you could be up there because you could be in trouble. Like, what did I do on the weekend? There's a few things rolling through your mind, but I still remember like it was yesterday. Like, he just said, "How would you feel, starting for us in the number five jersey?" And like, that gave me goosebumps just saying that then, because that when I got that jersey to play in under 20s, that number five jersey, I still remember like it was yesterday. I said to Benny Hunt, I said, "But it's going to take a lot of people to take this jersey off me. I love this number." And I said, I'm never going to give it up that easy. And the other reason was because I knew the people that had played in that jersey before me. That I didn't want to disappoint. You know, so you've got Lottie, you've got Wendell Saylor, who paved the way for kids like me to really be successful at this club. And it's a lot of weight. It seems like a lot of weight on your back, but you just, it's the Broncos, man. You go out there and you do Broncos things. And I don't know how else to explain it, but that week was just like, I even say to my best mates and all my mum and my grandparents, I was like, man, just all those times you drove me to training, all those times you did all this stuff for me, we scrounged up money for me to go on footy camps to, you know, do stuff like that. And they're the things you think about before you play your debut, not about the preseason or anything like that. You think about everything that's led up to this moment. You go, I've busted my ass and my family's busted my ass for me to be here. And that's what makes it so much sweeter. Honestly, so much sweeter. And then you go out there and, like you said, the first time you run out, you're like, don't stuff up. Do not stuff up.
How did you play your first game?
Yeah, I played really well, actually. I scored a try on my debut, so I was pretty happy with that. But I think the people that were around me made it a lot easier for me. I mean, Kay Carmichael was my fullback at the time, and you know, that made it a lot easier for me. Hodjo was injured at the time, but Israel Folau was my centre. You know, he'd had years of experience. Darren Lockyer, Peter Wallace. Lockyer was my, my half on this side, and Sammy Thaiday was my second rower. So, you know, you think about who was inside me. I had Israel Folau, Sam Thaiday, and Darren Lockyer. I mean, you know, all I've got to do is ask the question, you know, am I doing something wrong or if I'm doing something right? And I wasn't really too much of a panicker on the field. I just, you know, I just would ask. I'd keep asking, just, you know, oh, do I need to do anything more? And, you know, Kay would be say, you know, more runs, you know, get more meters for us. Just don't drop the ball. Catch it on the full. It's what we want. It's what we – just things that you go and pre-see the whole training regime during the week. Yeah. You have to nail. And that's just how it went. And I was pretty lucky. I was surrounded with some grouse footy players, man.
So how was the try on debut? Did you have a bit of running to do, or?
I had a little bit of work to do. Ty Williams was my winger who was opposite me, and obviously I knew he was a great footy player, and I was a bit nervous to play against Queensland. It wasn't a lot of work, but it was for me. It felt like a lot of work. I mean, we were 10 out, and Kay threw a cutout ball on the fourth tackle, and it bypassed Izzy, and I caught it. And it sort of was like, I probably had like 3 meters to beat him in. But it was just a little left foot jink, ball in the right hand and put it down right in the corner. And for someone who hasn't played first grade before and your adrenaline just takes over, man. So you basically just go, no, there's nothing stopping me from scoring this try right now. Like, I might be.
I bet you feel like it couldn't come quick enough, though, could you? Like, I need to put this ball down.
That's the thing. I didn't score until to even it up. That was the 75th minute. So, I scored right at the end. And then Peter Wallace kicks a field goal for us to win it in the 79th minute. So, as a debut goes for someone who's 18 years old. It was huge, humongous.
Yeah.
And if I don't score that try there and I stuff it up, I probably don't take a lot of confidence out of my game. It might come down to some moments for players that, might make or break you. I mean, I've seen kids who've come into the game and not play good their first one and then take a long time to come back from that. But I don't think I had a problem with, confidence. I think it was just consistency at the start of my career. And like everyone, you just need to get that right before you can be a superstar in this game.
Yeah, that's right. So, mate, if you'd have had a shocker, if you had just hadn't played well, how do you think you would have got over that mentally? What would you have done? So, obviously, you've had bad games. Everyone doesn't play every game. That's great. What have you done, I suppose, from your own experience to get yourself up and go, no, I've still got this. I can still do this. I just had a shit day.
Yeah, it's just forgetting about it, honestly. And it's hard to say that because, I mean, personally, if I know I've had a terrible game, like a bad one that I've put my team in really bad positions, but I'm also, I'm a half glass half full type of guy. Yeah. So I don't just think about the bad stuff. I think about all the great stuff, good stuff I did on the field. So, me being upset will probably last 45 to an hour and then I'll get over it. I'll just move on because they can't change anything about it. I mean, like, what am I supposed to change? I'll have to get the training on Monday and I know that I've got to do those things better than I didn't do right. And that's what makes a good footy player and what doesn't, I think. And like the people that I followed, we're always people like that. So it's always about latching onto people who are good. Lockie was the first one to train, last one to leave. And, they're the people that, made sure. And if he lost the game, he was upset, but he moved on pretty quickly. But he made sure on Monday when we turned up, he made sure he said to us, we need to bust their ass to fix what we've got wrong. And I think that's what kids can take away from, the game. You just got to remember that there's always next week, man. There's always another year to better yourself. And whether that's in sport, I mean, if you don't play sport anymore, my life now is lifestyle. I mean, what have I got to do? If today is shit for me, what have I got to do to make it better tomorrow? What did I do wrong today? So I try to take a lot of my footy analogies and use them in my life, I think. And I think that's the biggest thing that I've done. And like my routine, you just got to keep it going and make sure you stay on top of it.
Yeah, no, 100% agree. When I'm working with kids all the time, I'm letting them know, look, if you've had a bad start to life, and I think this is a similar sort of thing as well, getting over things. If you've had a bad shit, if you've been dealt some shit cards, you know what? We've all got a shit story. Everyone's got a shit story.
Yeah, definitely.
But you either choose to live by that and let it drag you down for the rest of your life, or it can be a part of your life, but you can put it to the side and go, right, because of that, it's helped me grow and help me move on and make better choices, I think.
Oh, definitely. And I think this generation, unfortunately, unfortunately just hold on to things too long. And you're a better person if you just let it go, and or if you wanted, if you want to hold on to it, mold it into something that's going to make you a better person. You know, like exactly, you said, yeah. mold. You're the only person that can make yourself better. So, just make sure that this thing up here is the best thing that you've got. You know, your mind, and if it's not positive, then what else do you have? So, like people have been dealt shit hands. We just got to move on, man, and hold on to that shit for the rest your life.
That's right, yeah. And you know what, everybody likes to hear that when you've actually had a bit of success in your own life, people like to hear those pretty stories as well, like how you did it, because
yeah, definitely.
It gives other people hope that, like, I've been in the hole before, that, you know what, but I climbed out of it and I managed. And look, you've been in the biggest of holes, and look, I know everybody talks about this, but we can't have this interview without talking the injury. I hope you don't mind, because
it was
fucking terrible. Like, as everybody, have you ever watched it?
Oh, heaps of times. It doesn't bother me at all. I think I need to, knowing with me healing as in my head, I had to watch it.
Yeah.
I had to keep watching it. Yeah, I had to. Like, I didn't want to hide from it. Like, I don't want to, if I do things like this, man, like it's me going, nah, I don't want to talk about it all the time. Like, it doesn't define who I am. I'm a strong person. I know how strong I am from this incident. So, yeah, I'm never going to hide from something that has gone wrong, something that I've done wrong in my life as well. I mean, if I'll be the first person to put my hand up, if I do something wrong that doesn't seem right to people and they don't like that, I'll put my hand up, definitely. Yeah. I'll never take a backward step from that. But from this incident, it doesn't bother me talking about it at all. It's me now, you know, it's a part of my life, and I understand that.
So after the injury, right, the terrible injury, you obviously had multiple operations. I know you had grafts and fucking, you were always, you know, obviously it's still an ongoing issue with your ankle. After that operation, were you always positive laying in that hospital bed, I'm going to get back on the horse and I'm going to fucking do this again? I don't know, things didn't turn out how you wanted to. I know you came back a few games through North, a couple of games at North.
Correct. Yeah.
What was your mindset like after the injury, before you'd actually played?
Well, there was a lot of soul searching through that time. I was, I was injured, and you can't sugarcoat it at all. I was severely depressed through the time I was coming up and trying to get back to the game. But I knew, I found myself in there and in the hospital, and I knew that it's going to take every. Whether that had meant me playing footy again, or whether that had meant me just moving on with my life, and it took a lot. That time I was in the hospital, you know, I was in there for 9 weeks. I was in a room for 3 of it because of infection reasons, and I went a bit weird. I got a bit crazy, and I don't know how to explain it. There was times where I was at home and I was severely depressed, and I think the back end of it was the hardest bit, because it was a time where I was like, all right, you know, you're gonna call quits on this drill, but you've got to do it, you know what I mean? And it's so hard to do in your head. You need to say I can't do this anymore, but you don't want to, because I'm a stubborn bastard, and I know that I can push further, but how much further am I going to push for me to break? And look, I gave everything. Like, I'll say it here now, I gave everything I possibly could. I couldn't give any more, man. I was gone. Like, my physio told me he thought I was going to give up after I got out of the hospital. It was 2.5 years before I gave up. He was like, he's like, you're crazy. He goes, you're honestly, you'd come in here every day and I'd never say it to you, but I knew you weren't going to make it, but you needed to realize that. So, but there was days where he was dumbfounded as well, and he was like, how am I running? How am I doing any of this stuff? And that was just pure determination. I was so sore every day. Like, I was in pain every single day.
That pain must have been terrible.
Oh, every day I ran. But every opportunity I got to train with the boys, fuck, man, I ran with it, man. Literally, I was like, I'm going to go out there and train with my mates. Like, and it was like a party. Every time I ran out there too, they cheered, they were loving it. And I was like, this is why I play footy, man. This is why I play this game. Like, And I suppose some of them took inspiration out of, how I did that. And that's also what I wanted to leave. I wanted my teammates to realize that I was a fighter. I wanted to play this game with them. I didn't want to do it for anyone else. I wanted to play it because I loved playing the game and I loved playing footy with them. And I wanted to leave there and hopefully that one day there's a kid comes along, does the same thing as me, and something happens to him, but doesn't give up. And look, it might not happen to a lot of them, but if it happens to one or two of them, that'll make me feel a lot better because they push themselves and they don't even have to know me. I couldn't even care less. But if they hear my story they find out that I, push for this club and push for this place, and yeah, it would make me feel a lot better.
Somebody just asked a question there. Which players supported you during that? Well, did you have any really tight bonds with anybody at the time, or was it just the whole club supporting you?
Oh man, there was. Yeah, there was a lot of boys who were my close mates through it all, and it's hard to single out a lot of them because they were all there. They were all there, but I probably put it. When I was at home a lot of the time, I lived with my little brother, so he was huge for me. He's not much of a talker, but he constantly asked if I was okay and. That's all it takes for someone to do, I think, sometimes. Because there was times there, gee, where I thought I was gonna turn a really bad path. And
I can imagine, yeah.
if it wasn't for him most of the time, I think, yeah, I would have, touched. Well, I possibly might not have been here if it wasn't for my brother. So, but people like Benny Hunt, Maka, Hodjo, just the whole team, Hoffy, Joshy Hoffman, just the whole team who constantly visited me. Who didn't like going to the hospital, but they turned up anyway. The boys hated the hospital, but they still came for me. And then when I left and went home, and they how many times they visited, and that showed me that yeah, I've got mates. So now I've got to give a bit back to them. You know what I mean? That was like, all right, they're giving a lot to me. Now I've got to give a little bit back and push and bust my ass to try and play footy again.
Yeah, nice, mate. So, if I remember, look, I haven't researched this, but I think I remember that you might have played two games for North coming back.
Yeah, so I played. No, mate, I played more actually. So I played two games for
Oh,
the
did you?
Broncos in trial matches. I
Oh,
played
right.
two trial matches for the Broncos,
Well, is that what it
and then I
was, right?
played. Yeah, and then I played about eight games for North after
Did
I
you play
didn't make.
second row?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I played in the second row. Yeah, and there was a reason behind the reason why I played second row is because obviously I wasn't as fast on the wing anymore. I couldn't move as laterally as well as I could. So yeah, I wanted to make sure that. I was still a big boy, so I loved hitting people, so that didn't bother me, and I liked getting hit. So, yeah, look, I think the transition didn't really work to what we wanted it to, but it still gave me that urge to play footy again and still made me get up and being able to play because I tried to play in the centres week one at North, and I just got absolutely destroyed by the opposition number because I just couldn't move laterally. And it was really hard. So, yeah, I got into a position. Funny thing, actually, the first game I came back, I played for North, and I played in the second row. And I played about 35 minutes, and they were like, "All right, Joe, come off now. You're done for the day. Like, we only needed you to do 25." But me being me, I was like, "No, I want to do this kickoff, and I want to jam this guy off the kickoff." And I looked down the other end of the field, and I said, "Kick it over this side." He's about 120 kilos, this bloke. And I'm like, and one of the boys go, "Nah, I don't think it's a good idea." I was like, and pardon my friends, but I said, "Fuck that. I'm going to whack him. I'm going to absolutely whack him." Ended up knocking myself clean out, like proper clean out. And this is still when you could stay on the field when you got knocked out. So got back up, and everyone was sort of like, "Oh, this is bad. This is really bad." My whole team came and watched, like all the Bronx boys. And then I was like, no, I'm staying on. And then the next play, did the exact same thing, jammed someone, but knocked myself out again. But they lost the ball and we scored off it. And then I got up and I was like, yeah, I'm sweet to come off now. I'm good to come off now. Mate, I hadn't had contact for like, months, months and months. So I was like, I couldn't care less and probably lost a few brain cells along the way, which is not a good thing, but Yeah, just it happened the way it was.
I know when you've been in the boxing gym, you've just said, I just like wearing my mouth guard because I feel alive again. Like,
yeah,
strengthen that. You must miss that when you're a combat, when you're used to contact in your sport, it's so hard to explain to people who have never had it before. But you need it. You need it to feel alive.
Even when I was getting hit in the head, bloody hell, when we were sparring, yeah. I just didn't bother yeah, yeah. me. Like, I was like, this is gold. Yeah, until I get knocked out, you know, and then I'll probably regret it. But no, I just enjoyed having my mouth guard in and biting down on it and just getting real gritty again and having a go. And I think that's what I missed and what I wanted the most. And you know, you don't, when you play the game of footy, man, you don't realize how much you get bashed until the next day and you wake up and go, holy hell, oh man, my body is so sore. But I wouldn't change it for nothing. It's something that I love doing and something that I wanted to keep doing.
Mate, what's your number one moment on the footy field? Whether it's a whole day or a play, like did you have a game where you went, you know what, that day I was on, doesn't matter who was in front of me, they were getting beaten? Or did you have one play?
There's probably one play where I knew that, you know, I sort of could just see things differently to other people. And that was probably my try against Jonathan Thurston.
That is freaking freakish, that try.
That was my second year of first grade. You know, we needed to score a try to win that game to put us in the top four in the finals. And it was just, it just happened so... it just all happened so quickly, but I just knew what I was doing for some reason. And from that day on, I just had this confidence that I just couldn't take away from me. And I just knew when that had happened, every time I touched the ball, after that, because that year I played, I actually was 18th man for Origin in my second year of first grade. So I was 18th man in 2010. I debuted in 2009. And then after I got back from that camp, my confidence went through the roof. Just being around players who were elite at the elite level. I didn't play that year, but I just knew it had changed me as a player. I wish some people got that opportunity that haven't been playing outstanding footy. They get that opportunity to go in those camps because it changes you as a footy player, man. And I come out of there with all this confidence. Come out with confidence. It was pouring out of me, and I just was like, I was running into tackles, and I was like, man, people are just falling off me. I was like, this is crazy. And then 2011 came along, man, and I started that year I had spiders on me every game. It was just like every single game I was playing with confidence, and I'd walk off and, you know, people would ask me, if I score something or I did something, how did I do that? And I said, I don't know how I did it. I just did it. You know, it just happened. Yeah. Just so confident at the moment. It's just how I'm playing footy at the moment. So, my probably proudest moment is playing for the Indigenous All Stars, in the inaugural year with Preston Campbell because he was my idol. So he was my captain, and I thought he'd
Preston started.
His vision.
Yeah.
He was my idol, and then I played in this game for my people with my idol, and in the first Indigenous All-Stars in the inaugural year. So no one will ever take that away from me. So that moment was pretty special. Was pretty special. But I think the most nerve-wracking and mind-blowing moment I ever had was playing Origin. That was a different beast. It was, and you can be as confident as you want, but you go into that game and it feels like you're getting hit with bricks. Like people are hitting you with better blocks. Like, that's how hard they hit in that game.
Why is that?
I think, well,
you put so much energy into it and so does everybody else.
And it's, you're not going to let anyone down. That game, you can be as fucking tired as you want, but you just will not let your mate down. Like, you just go and go and go. And you think you're tired, but you're not. You just keep going and going. And I think that's what you get the best 17 in the whole competition, and you get them bashing each other for 80 minutes, and that game goes up. That goes to the death every time. It's not, you know, there's nothing. But I still remember my first Origin run. It was, we kicked off to them. They went their set of six. And then they fifth and last kick straight to me. And I remember catching it and running backwards while I caught it and turning around. And I've still got the picture in my house of me taking this big, deep breath and going, oh, shit, this is about to happen. Like, I'm about to run at all these people. And I thought to myself, like, in this split second, I thought, all right, where am I going to run? And I seen Paul Gallen, and I went, all right, there's no one going to hit harder than him in the game. So if I just get this over and done with first, then let's just do it.
It's the worst it can be. Yeah,
that's, so I ran as hard as I could. Didn't, well, he jammed me, like, absolutely. I got whacked by a few of them, but I got up, got to play the ball, and I thought, all right, sweet, we're good to go now. And, yeah, I can do this. And, you know, when I look around the field as well, I think to myself, I'm like, man, this is my third year of first grade. Do I deserve to be here with these people, like this caliber of, you know, talent? And, man, it was, it's not only the game, but the, man, when you go and have the piss up, it's fun, it's so fun. Like, that's the stuff you never think that's going to be cool either, you know, when you're growing up. Yeah. But that stuff was fun. The bonding stuff was enjoyable. Training every day. My roommate was JT, you know, like, man, it was, my first roommate was Billy Slater. Actually, my first ever roomie I walked in with, and I'm an idiot. I walked in and said, hey, mate, I'm Jarrell. Yeah, and he goes, yeah, I know who you are, you idiot. But just me being me. I felt like a young kid. Well, I was 20, so I was nervous as. And,
true.
So, yeah, that was a pretty funny moment. And till that day as well, Bill never used to, every time I went to hotels, he always untucks his sheets out of his bed so they're not tight. You know how they tuck them really tight? Ever since I travel now, that's what I do. So, it's funny.
Mate, did you play that whole series, game one, two, and three?
Yeah.
And was it a whitewash or was it 2-1 or?
Nah, we lost the second game. 18-12 and down in New South Wales, and then we came back up here, and it was Lockie's last game. For Queensland. So, I think we ended up dushing them 32-20 or something. That last game we put them away pretty well.
You know, like, say this didn't happen to you, but say, you know, like, you play game one and you lose, and then you get dropped. You know what I mean? You know, do you reckon players that still have that feeling? You know, when you're not playing first grade, you're playing reserve grade, and you're like, you hope the bloke in front of you breaks your fucking leg so you can get you. Do still people still have that, or are they all go Queensland, or are they like, fuck you, break your leg?
Nah. I mean, if you are like that, then you shouldn't be in that team, man. Like, if you have that mentality of, oh, I hope he, you know, not hurting, or I hope he doesn't, I hope he doesn't, you know, hammy, I mean. You know, but I hope he doesn't get picked, or. Yeah, look, if you have that mentality, then you should never be in that Queensland side, because people who have ever been in that side, and there's obviously only, I think, what, there's only been 219 players who have ever played for Queensland. So those boys know what it's like. Those people know. Yeah. It's a brotherhood, man. It's not about who's got the biggest, you know, cock. It's not anything like that. Nothing like that. It's not an ego thing. It's, you go in there and you play for your mate, and you play for your state, and that's how I see it. And I've never been in a fight in my life on a footy field. Gee, that's the first time I ever went to a fight on the footy field was Origin. Was the first time I ever threw a punch in my life on a footy field. So, and I'm so anti fighting on the footy field, not because I don't think I can win. It's because I think other people are going to hit me from other places, like from other, like, from
no,
either way.
No referee there.
Yeah, so I just refuse to fight on the footy field because I don't think you can win. You know, I think teammates are coming from everywhere. So I still remember looking at Brett Morris across and just went, let's do it. Like, let's go. And that was the coolest. That was one of the coolest things that happened. So never again, I fought, though. Never again, because I think those moments are made for Origin, you know. And
that's right.
I think the game is, you know, since the Paul Gallen and Nate Miles situation. I think the game's gone not soft. I wouldn't say soft because it's not soft. The game's too hard to be soft. I think it's I think everyone's a bit more cautious now. And but what scares me about that is, you know, you think no one's going to punch you, but if that other person's got a vendetta, man, they're going to punch you no matter what. So you don't put your hands up at all. You don't guard yourself. It's scary because you know who you're trying to fight. They could snap at any minute.
I didn't even prepare to ask this question. You know, back where even before your time, when they were really allowed, well, I suppose in your time they did as well, but when people were allowed to punch, or was it like go out and, well, I suppose some coaches did set it up, you go out and punch. Do you reckon some of the guys nowadays, since, how long has it been since no punch rule? 8 years or so? Maybe not that long?
Yeah, I think it's been about five, probably about five.
Do you think some of the guys playing now would get away, would still make it at the top if they could still get intimidated by those enforcers that used to crack those little halfbacks and that? Would they still make it, or did their balls not big enough, you know?
Yeah, look, I think, and this is my personal opinion, I think we have some real, real soft cocks in the game, most definitely. I really think that there's a lot of people that are all talk and no walk. So the answer to your question is definitely. Like, if you got players on the field, like, I think Hodjo's biggest attribute in his game was him chatting to the other, you know, your opposite, his opposition number and talking him out. Yeah. But he knew that he could, if he got into a one-on-one on a field, into a fight, and I'm not talking about boxing, I'm talking like fight.
He'd
have a go.
Fight.
He'd have a go. So that's what I think players were scared of. You're definitely right. I mean, if you go into a game now and, you know, you put in someone who you know is going to bash the other second rower or front rower, or not run over the top of them, but if they get smart, they're going to get their head bashed in. Yeah, then most definitely there'll be some boys that wouldn't make it these days in the game, I think. I obviously think we've come a full circle, and we're probably not going to come back to, you know, having this brawls in the game anymore, unfortunately. And I don't condone it. I definitely don't think it's right, but I think it has taken that tiny bit of, fearness out of some players, definitely.
Well, I remember, like, just going back to your Norse, I remember, again, old bloke talking about it, but I remember back when scrums were really tight, I'm waiting for the front rowers to pack in. I was playing at Norse. I can't remember the hooker, but he fucking fed me. He just fucking jabbed me. I packed in. Front rowers are way taller than me, and I just seen the other hooker, he's packed in like this. And I'm thinking, what's this fucking doing? He's packed, and I'm just fucking, all I could do was slide down the bottom of the scrum and cower on the ground because my head was like a speedball that lifted. but things like that, they intimidated you, or they very well could intimidate you if you had a bit of a weaker ticker, you know what I mean, like you said.
Oh, most definitely. And I think sometimes in this day and age, I think I think some of these players, it's great that you have all this ability, but I like to see a bit of push and shove. I want to see that you're passionate about your team. I want to see that you're passionate about your teammate. But, you know, as soon as the second man jumps in, penalty gone, 10, see you later. Yeah. Whoever does it next, you're going for 10. And then you immediately think, oh, well, I can't let my team down if I keep doing this. So I'm just going to shut my mouth. We're just going to beat them on talent, and that's just the way the game's gone now. You have to beat on talent. Yeah. You can't beat on brawn anymore, and it is a bit upsetting because I am the old school like you, G. I don't mind seeing it.
Yeah.
I hope when Origin comes back,
let it go a little bit.
Yeah, let it go a little bit.
Just turn a blind eye to it. That's all good, mate. From now on forwards, have you got a plan? Where's your life going?
Yeah,
I know it's all great for you at the moment, so
it's a good question at the moment. Look, as of this day, no, I don't have a vision right now. And these, I've never been one to really force something, and I don't want to force it. Look, yep. If I fall into something that I'm like, you know, this might be the best thing that ever happened to me. It might be the worst thing. I don't know yet, but I'm not going to force anything, and I don't have a vision right now. But when it happens, I'll know how to deal with it. Like I said, I've been in pretty bad places in my life. This is nowhere near to where I've been. Yeah. So I'm just going to take things really slow at the moment. And look, I've got a great wife who's very supportive. I've been very busy around the house. I've been doing a lot of housework, which I don't mind at the moment. And the other thing is, like, I just don't know the extent of what's happening in the world at the moment. So, look, do I jump into something that I don't think is going to last, and they say, "Oh, we don't need you anymore"? Do I try over here? So, the unknown is more me waiting for, you know, our government to say, "All right, these things can go back into place. This can go back into place." That's probably when I'll take a bit more of a step into a direction that I want to. But I do. I'm lucky over the time of my years being at the club and being in the spotlight, I suppose. I've got a lot of people I know. I've got a lot of people reached out, and I've reached out to a lot of people. So there are things there, not necessarily that I'm jumping in to do, but I mean, vision, you know, my long vision, and I'd like to get into radio. I love talking. I'm a morning person. I'd love to be on a morning radio show somewhere in Australia. I think that would really fit me really well, because, you know, I run all the podcasts at the Broncos. I'm probably going to start my own podcast, actually, to be honest. Don't know what I'm going to call it yet, but, you know, I've got so many people that I know that would happily already been told that they'd jump on and jump on my podcast. So, you know, that takes away from the Broncos. Look, I want to be back there, but I also want to probably just do a bit of Jarrell for once and do a bit of myself. I've put a lot of time in that. I put a lot of time and effort to, you know, the Broncos in the last 14 years, which sounds crazy, man. It's half my life. I'm just getting my new podcast stuff in the next couple of weeks. So I'm excited to start that. But I think radio is something I do. If I could go to a job, it'd either be radio or coaching. And they're my two.
You got a better head
for
radio than TV.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, I've been on the computer screen and the TV for too long in the Bronx, and I think I know I've got a good head for radio, mate. So, look, I love talking shit, and I'll talk about anything. So, if there's any radio stations out there, come and grab me.
Get on it.
I'm ready to go.
Look at Kempy's doing excellent from his little podcast that he started. Look at how much that's growing. He got a sponsor, and now he's opened a bar, and he's doing excellent. Oh, I know he's working really hard, but he's doing excellent.
Yeah, he's a genius, man. And look, I remember even starting to help him at the start of when he was doing all this, doing a bit of stuff for him. And he's so generous. He's like, "Do you want anything?" I was like, "Nah, man. Like, this is why people do this stuff. This is why I'm here." To support each other. And that was like 4 years ago he started that now. And he's doing a great job. He started that 4 years ago, and he's doing a great job. And he is working hard, like you said, G, but he's a smart guy. And this is the time, man, for me to probably invest in myself a little bit and really, you know, look after Jarrell for once, because I've probably given a little bit of myself out, you know, in these last 5 or 6 years. I think, and my wife said it best. She said, you need to give yourself a bit of love, and make sure that you look after yourself. So, look, I can see if anything I start, I know I'll be successful with. It's just about, because I'm so professional of what I want to do, I just got to do it right. And if I don't, I'll be annoyed with myself.
Mate, I think that, like, whether you're a successful athlete, successful businessman, successful in anything, successful family, whatever it is that you're chasing, you'll be successful at everything, I think, because you always want to be the best. Second place is never good enough for people that have been in sport or successful sport, I think. And you know, if you were learning knitting, well, you'd want to be the best knitter in the fucking club, wouldn't you? You know what I mean? Like,
oh, well, if we're talking about the club, well, I probably am the best knitter at the club because no one else did. So.
But yeah, mate, there's one more place I want to go, and I want to just ask a couple of questions that the people listening might want to know.
Guys, thanks for tuning in today and listening to the amazing story of Gerard Yao Yi. What an amazing athlete, an amazing man. Good luck for the future, Gerard. Guys, don't forget to follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. On Instagram, every Tuesday and Thursday, we've got free PE classes for 20 minutes for all kids that are homeschooling right now. Make sure your mums and dads join in too.